I confess that I find myself nonplussed when I listen to friends and neighbors talking animatedly together about the comparative merits of various burglar alarm systems, particularly when one climaxes this conversation by ruefully telling how he was raiding the icebox in his kitchen when the police raided his house because he had forgotten to turn off some motion detector device when he'd gotten hungry and come downstairs. I belong to the generation, or at least I was conditioned by the generation, which never locked the back door, and certainly never locked the car door. And when I hear those somber sounds blaring at me from our car radio, you know, lock it or lose it, I'm a little bit shocked still. And I'm disturbed when I go to make a visit and I'm ushered into a viewing cubicle, a locked area in the apartment building, and I must be interviewed by an intercom, and I must be viewed by closed-circuit television before I'm allowed to proceed in my rather innocent rabbinic way. Now, the statisticians who deal with such things have recorded a rather rapid increase in crime, particularly in crime against persons, violent crime. There's some argument, as there always is argument over statistics, as to their meaning. There are some who say that much of this rise in crime is to be attributed to the fact that more crimes are reported. Crimes of violence are now not largely limited to the huddled mass in the center of our cities who fear the police and therefore tended not to report crimes to the authorities. Crime is mobile, it has wheels, it takes place against the middle class and the upper classes and the insured classes, and therefore crime tends to be reported more. But there seems to be indications that there has been, all this having been discounted, all this probably being true, there has been a major increase in crimes against persons in the last 15 or 20 years. This judgment is made on the basis of comparative crime statistics with the major communities of Western Europe. Crimes against persons tend to run from 4 to 8 times higher in these United States than where similar insurance programs and similar police statistics are kept in Western Europe. And this rise in the crime rate has certainly been balanced by a sharp increase in our own rates of anxiety, in our rates of fear. I find my friends and my neighbors and my congregation increasingly fearful of going out at night. Half of the backyards in our neighborhood are lit constantly from dusk to dawn by lights which have no other purpose than scaring stray cats away or stray burglars. And this wasn't true just a year, 2 years, 3 years ago. You and I know people who will not go out for an evening of theater, of the symphony, to an art museum, because they are fearful of the things that move inside the dark. There is no synagogue building more beautiful or more complete than this one. But we've had to build a branch. Why? Because a building is not brick and mortar, but people in service. And fathers and husbands would not let their wives and their children come unescorted to this building, and they themselves will not come with their families very often in the evening. We live in a world where crime and fear tends to misshape, to contort and distort our lives. And of course, there is the cry to take the problem in hand, to do something about it. Safety in the streets, support your police, more law and order. It's understandable. And certainly many politicians and some demagogues are trying to run these fears of ours into power for themselves. And the question I'd like to raise with you this morning is simply this. Can more law and order significantly decrease our fears and the rate of crime? Or is the problem somewhat larger? And are we generally unwilling to look at the broader implications of the problem? Because when we do, there are no simple solutions. I warn you now that when I conclude, I will have no simple program to lay before you, no guarantees that this or that or the other program, this or that or the other new tax, this or that or the other new professional skill will significantly affect, in the short term, the nature of the life that we lead. The conventional wisdom has it. The problem of crime is the problem of our law enforcement agencies. The problem of crime is the problem of the police, the problem of the courts, and the problems of our prisons and penal institutions. And our papers and our magazines have been filled with a bitter attack and filled with critical analysis of each of these three major components of the law enforcement undertaking. And the implication is always there, that if we only invested more money, only brought these institutions up to date, we would in a major way move towards a solution to the problem of freedom of movement, the problem of psychological ease and security, problem of controlling crime. Now, I believe in law and order. Any rabbi must who reads his own tradition. Our tradition, our Torah, is filled with criminal laws which prescribe not only punishment but deterrence. The Bible believes in such things as flagellation and capital punishment. They're specifically permitted by the Bible. They're encouraged as a form, obviously, of deterrence to such crime. I don't believe in what George Bernard Shaw once called the devil's sentimentality. That is the practice which some have adopted of our age of finding rationalizations and justifications of every aggressive and violent act by people. It's the result of their upbringing. They lacked a mother, they lacked a father, they lacked the proper environment, they lacked the proper education. That explanation which we hear so easily from some lips until the violence attacks them directly. And then they begin to become law and order nicks. Now it seems to me beyond doubt that each of the major components of our law enforcement system needs to be upgraded and updated. That's true of any institution in our society. Our police have traditionally been drawn from the least educated classes. They have not been drawn from people who represented the best of our human resource. They have been trained as if this was still the 19th century, where all a policeman needed to do was to have muscle and a nightstick and to control some young delinquents on his block. Many of our police are neither trained in human relations nor in the new technology of crime detection, all the new electronic and other equipment which is available to them. It's without doubt that these safety forces of ours need to be modernized and rehabilitated and a better level of human being be brought into them. And there's no doubt in my mind that our courts need to be updated and to be made more efficient. Unfortunately, in many places, a symbiotic relationship has developed between the courts and the legal profession, which allows unscrupulous lawyers to get delay after delay in the prosecution of a crime, of a case, until finally the witnesses and the plaintiff can no longer afford to leave their businesses to go down and to wait endlessly until the case is brought to open trial. There is no doubt in my mind that our prison systems are a national disgrace. We've hardly begun to invest the money into these systems, much less competent manpower, that we have not even begun to do the basic research in emotional, environmental, and psychological rehabilitation, that our prisons are little more than places to lock away people, to keep them in the deep freeze for several months or years, because we don't know what else to do with them, and that many of those who go to prison come out not rehabilitated, far more professional in their criminal skills. There's no doubt that our prisons are graduate schools in crime. And there are reasons for much of this. The reason our police have not been well paid for the dangerous profession, they have not been looked upon as a status profession in our society. The middle and upper middle class have thought of the police as someone one hires when one has a party, someone one bribes when one gets a police ticket. They have been spoken derogatorily of across most dining room tables. The legal profession has not wanted to dirty its hands, for the most part, in criminal law. I saw a statistic someplace which indicated that only one lawyer in 50 was engaged in any way in the whole criminal law process, as prosecutor, as defense attorney, as judge, as public defender. 49 out of 50 of our lawyers, though their profession is that of the law, of the defense of society, of a just and legal society, dealing essentially with persons, have preferred to deal with property and with power. It's clean, it's neat, it can be carried out in the office. One doesn't have to deal with all the incongruities and the pathology of the human being. And much that has been the traditional status of our courts, the inefficiency of our courts, the lack of confidence people have had in some of our courts, has been developed from the fact that the least able in the legal profession have often been those who have been drawn to the courts, the criminal courts, and because the best of a very highly talented and professional group have turned their backs on this major responsibility and looked upon the law as if it dealt only with corporate undertakings, with property and this kind of problem, and didn't deal with the problems of safety and the human being and crime. And our prisons exist as they are because the criminal was looked upon as someone who had to be locked away, not as someone who one wanted to know, to rehabilitate. Because by and large, the criminal class was drawn from the poverty group, not from the power group. They weren't our sons and daughters, or our brothers and sisters, or our parents. There were exceptions, but the vast majority came from the poor and would go back to the poor. And the labor unions didn't want competition from felons, and so that the various kinds of occupational training that supposedly took place in our institutions was training for meaningless undertakings. There were no skills involved in punching out your license numbers year after year and weaving burlap bags into which dirt could be poured in road construction. This was the kind of undertaking that was allowed. There were many reasons then that these three agencies of our law enforcement undertaking were in the state that they were 10, 15 years ago. There's every evidence that, to a certain degree, communities are beginning to be concerned with the efficiency, the propriety, the purpose of their operation. But my thought this morning is, although all of these concerns must be prosecuted urgently, we need a better police force, we need more efficient courts, and we, God knows, need a prison system which will in fact be one which deals with the rehabilitation of the human being. All this work should go ahead. It will not, it cannot touch major causes of crime. It will not, it cannot solve the problem which besets us, how to create a society in which we can live with a sense of security. There's a professor of law at the University of Chicago by the name of Hans Zeisel. Dr. Zeisel has concerned himself with this whole question which I raised before you, and he presents some rather interesting statistics. He says in the first instance that about 15% of the crimes of violence which are reported in the United States are investigated in such a way that they lead to an arrest. And he's looked into those countries, England, the Scandinavian countries, which have highly professional investigative systems. And he has found that in those countries, the rate of arrests following investigation for crimes of violence reaches about 20%, but not much higher. Which would indicate that even were we to thoroughly modernize the police system, we can increase the number of arrests by maybe 5%, by maybe 25%, 5% of the total number. But we will not deal with 80% of be able to deal with 80% of the crime in terms of arrest, and that if large numbers of crimes are being committed, large numbers, very large numbers of crimes will be successfully committed. That is, they will not result in arrest. Then he has gone on to report on some studies by the United States government as to what would happen in terms of the speed and efficiency of the courts. If we were to invest in X number of dollars, bringing more judges and more courts into operation and speeding up the entire legal system, providing all the while for the due process safeguards, which we must include. And these studies, he said, show us that even were we to double our present investments in courts and all the courts require, we could probably reduce the time required to bring a man who is indicted to trial, which now runs, according to his figures, from 6 to 8 months to approximately 5 to 7 months. There would still be this long lag, no matter how much money we invested in this procedure. And then he turns his attention to the prisons. And he comments on this, that in those countries, as in Scandinavia, where large amounts of money, time, and highly skilled people have been invested in the penal rehabilitation institutions, the rate of rehabilitation, if one measures it by the rate of ability to stay out of prison in the future, has not been successful, materially changed. In the United States, except for juvenile offenders, about 70% of those who are in jail and released will be back in jail within 3 years. In the Scandinavian countries, that figure is reduced to around 60%. If you put all of these statistics together, and if in fact these statistics be true, and I suspect that they are, it is very clear that were we to modernize all the elements that are component elements of our law enforcement system, we would not staunch down, we would not limit markedly the amount of crime, nor our effectiveness in dealing with the criminal. If crime is being spawned as it is by our society today in increasing numbers, nothing that the legal system can do by itself will staunch the flow of crime. Because the causes of crime operate independently of the law enforcement system. You may know these statistics. Crime runs about 10 times as high in the suburbs of a city as in the core city. It runs about 35 times as high in the rural areas of our country as in cities of over 250,000. Now, the law enforcement agencies did not create the slum. They did not create the ghetto dweller. They did not create all of the lack of institutions, of education, of recreation, of counseling, of guidance, all the signs of social pathology which exist in the center city. And there's nothing that they themselves can do, the police, the courts, or the prisons, to deal with the problem in the center city. And you and I read in our papers just a week ago the crime statistics for Clark County, which made it very clear that crime in the center city itself was not a uniform statistic. There were more crimes by a great number in those areas which were racially impacted, where the racial minority, the blacks, existed, than on the west side, where one had the ethnics. And there was even greater crime in those eastern suburban areas where the first great group of blacks were immigrating into, than in the center city, again, on the west side. Now, the course did not create racism in America. The course did not bring the black a slave into America. The course did not keep the black in his abject condition for four generations in America. The court did not bring up the black from the South during the Second World War to provide cheap labor for our industry. The court did not throw the black into inadequate housing or fail to provide for him adequate education or fail to take account of his particular needs at all times in the last 20 or 30 years. And really nothing that the courts can do. No matter how many human relation courses they develop, and they should. And nothing our police can do, no matter how many of them go to school to learn how to deal with those who are not white and ethnic, for not from their own backgrounds. There's really little that they can do to solve the problems which a racist America has spawned. And it's not the fault of the police, nor of the courts, nor of the prisons, that there are something over 25 million handguns in the United States. There's a great big office building in Washington, D.C., sponsored by the middle class and the upper classes of America, all those tens of thousands of people who subscribe to the National Rifle Association, who have led and undertaken a multi-million dollar lobby annually to see to it that that 40 homes out of every 100 in America can have a loaded pistol at the night table, where a child can get a hold of it and shoot his playmate, because these guns are not very accurate and they're not very good at anything except exploding in the hands of those who don't know how to use them. The courts, police, the prisons didn't spawn the history of violence, the love of guns, which is so much a part of our American heritage. Whatever the issues be, whatever the symptoms, whatever the issues be which cause society to spawn crime, the law enforcement agencies are not at the center of those issues. They are called upon to deal with social pathology, but they do not themselves create it. And that's why, if we want seriously to deal with the problem of crime in America, we must seriously deal with the problem of justice in America. And the problem of justice in America is, as you all know, not a simple problem, and one which cannot be simply solved. It's a problem which has to do with civil rights, and job opportunity, the equality of employment, and decent housing, and adequate education, and adequate recreation, and ecology, all of the problems which we know confound us and confuse us and challenge us every day that we live. And until we deal in a major way with these causes of crime, we're not going to be able to staunch crime and to create the society which some of us think we remember from earlier years, when crime was what happened way down in the flats. The poor murdering the poor before the poor had wheels, before the poor could come out into our areas and bring their guns and feel that they were Robin Hood, taking from wealth and privilege the privileges and wealth that they had been denied by an unjust and violent society. Now there are band-aids, there are reforms which one can suggest. It would seem to me that we should long since have outgrown that rather Puritan morality which requires all kinds of laws against gambling. It seems to me that if we could do away with the needs of the police to be involved with checking on all gambling spots and in some way or other legalize gambling, perhaps to the benefit of our educational system as it is in New York State, we would take the police away from one of their major sources of corruption and of under-the-table income. We'd be forced to deal with the police in terms of providing them a professional level of income directly and above board, and we could require of them the level of competence which they ought to show. It would seem to me, too, that given the nature of our society, where so much of the crimes of violence seem to be directly related to drug addiction, we ought, if we cannot staunch the flow of drugs into the United States, and I believe we ought to be vigilant against this, we ought to provide clinics in our cities where the known addict could go and could get his fix, that which will keep him going for the next day, so he doesn't have to go out with a pistol to get the $25 or $50 that he needs day by day for this terribly expensive habit. Perhaps someday our physicians, our medical research will find us ways to cure those who are already addicted. Until that time, there's very little that we can do but to provide the addict with that which will keep him passive and benign, keep him from being a threat to us, and I know no other way than to have some kind of legalized clinic for them. But when you have taken these and other kinds of remedial steps, it remains clear, to me at least, that the causes of crime have not really been dealt with. There's been crime in every society. There's always been the criminal mind. But crime, when it multiplies geometrically as it has in our society, is related to social cancer. It's related to the megalopolis, to the anonymous life which we lead in the megalopolis, which permits us for a person to go out without fear of exposure, to commit a crime, without fear really of being identified. Somehow we need to build community, a sense of belonging back into these multi-million population communities which we have established. Crime relates directly to the ability of a person to find fulfilling occupation. It's no matter of chance that those who are unemployed are largely involved in crime, and those who are minimally employed, employed in the repetitive operations, employed in those kinds of undertakings which give no satisfaction, that it's here that crime is spawned. And certainly we need to begin to deal with the problems of race, because crime has gotten a certain kind of aura, of virtue, in this last decade or so. It's become an act of assertiveness for the minorities to take back that which they claim the privilege, though not always the person they take it from is not always privileged, but the privileged have. There's a certain aura of the Sir Galahad or the Knight Gallant among the more militant within the minority communities. And one can understand the mood. There is so much in this nation and we have so little. Here is the oppressive society and we are the oppressed. And if we send our children to read Robin Hood, can't we understand how these people, the young particularly among them, can look upon some of the criminals as Robin Hoods, those who are taking back that which was unrightfully taken from the sweat and the labor of the masses in the first place? We have to somehow reestablish the legitimacy of the social order. And that's not going to be easy to do. I've tried to analyze in my own mind why our Jewish society should, by and large, in biblical times certainly, have avoided any major crime wave. At the same time that it had these very stiff penalties for most crimes, and it operated on what sociologists tell us is the outmoded system of deterrence. And it's interesting. The Bible permits capital punishment for many kinds of crime. There are four different kinds of capital punishment, and you'd be shocked at the crimes for which the Bible permits one to take a life. But you know, when you read the sources, you discover that a court which once in 90 years ordered a man to be killed or a woman to be killed was looked upon by our ancestors as a murderous court. There were all these laws with the punishment, these rules of punishment, which permitted terrible kinds of deterrence, were in effect. Obviously, they were not used, and obviously, they were not necessary. And the question is why? And the answer, I believe, lies in the fact that our fathers believed that their society was doing all that could be done to create the larger justice. There had been the laws, and there had been the prophets. There had been the thou shalt nots, and there had been all kinds of laws which obviously, as do all laws, fall short of being absolute in their concept of justice. The Bible permits slavery. Couldn't do otherwise, but it limits slavery to 6 years. In the seventh year, the man must be free. The Sabbath law is a law which says one day in seven, even the slave must have the rights to his own life, to his own pursuits. No one can take away that dignity from him. Somehow, given the level of expectation of people in those days, the implicit sense of justice, the word of God commanding, you know, righteousness, righteousness shalt thou seek, was sufficiently woven into the fabric of society for people to be satisfied. And when there is this sense that the social order is as just as it can be, then you don't need a lot of police and a lot of mace and a lot of bugging devices. People police themselves. And it's that self-policing that we lack today. Because we lack in many segments of our society, not only among the racially oppressed, but among the children of the most privileged, we lack a sense that this society is one which is sufficiently filled with justice that it can be allowed to continue as it is. So many of our people believe that the crimes of violence which are being committed today are not so much being committed by the criminal is it being committed by society itself? What is Vietnam but the ultimate crime of violence? And what is racism but a crime of violence? And what is oppression but a crime of violence? Now, our expectations are very, very high. The biblical society does not meet our level of social expectation today. But we have that level, and for better or for worse. We're going to have to find ways in which to move up, to step up the level of justice in the social order. before we can begin to expect people to accept the legitimacy of that social order. I don't know how America is going to begin to solve these problems of crime, violence, if we take the shortcut way. More police, more electronic equipment, stiffer sentences, stiffer penalties, put them away for life. What will we do? We won't significantly reduce crime. Will significantly increase the violence of crime. The criminal will become more desperate. We won't significantly rehabilitate more people. We will simply alienate more people. And we will significantly reduce our own privacy. And we will significantly reduce the security of American democracy, because a police force ultimately is a threat to the social order. It can take law into its own hands. If we take the way of justice, we have a long way to go, and many difficult obstacles to overcome. And there are no simple solutions. But that way, the long way, the difficult way, is the only way, I believe, which can lead to lasting results. There's no reason in my mind why this society cannot solve the problem of violence and aggression and crime, if the society is willing to solve the problems of race, and the problems of poverty, and the problems of inequality. Amen.